Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Pentagon's top uniformed military officer last week said that enemy fighters attacking U.S. troops in Afghanistan are proxies of an ally, a veritable arm of Pakistan's intelligence service, said Admiral Mike Mullen. Blood on the hands of one of our most important and difficult and nuclear-armed allies. It's an old story with a lot of new heat this hour on Point. What is going on with Pakistan? We'll go in a few minutes to Kabul for the latest there, but first to the words of Admiral Mike Mullen himself, outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is his last week on the job. He has been more involved at a higher level with Pakistan than maybe any uniformed military officer at that height in American history. Here he was with extraordinarily blunt criticism of the government and intelligence service in Pakistan before the Senate Armed Services Committee last Thursday.
The Haqqani Network, for one, acts as a veritable arm of Pakistan's Internal Services Intelligence Agency. With ISI support, Haqqani operatives planned and conducted that truck bomb attack, as well as the assault on our embassy. We also have credible intelligence that they were behind the June 28th attack on the Intercontinental Hotel in Kabul and a host of other smaller but effective operations. In choosing to use violent extremism as an instrument of policy, the government of Pakistan, and most especially the Pakistani Army and ISI, jeopardizes not only the prospect of our strategic partnership, but Pakistan's opportunity to be a respected nation with legitimate regional influence. They may believe that by using these proxies, they are hedging their bets or redressing what they feel is an imbalance in regional power. But in reality, they have already lost that bet. By exporting violence, they have eroded their internal security and their position in the region. They have undermined their international credibility and threatened their economic well-being.
You can't get much hotter at a much higher level than that. Joining me now from Washington is Alexander Evans, a top-level counselor in the British Diplomatic Service, who also worked as senior advisor to Richard Holbrooke when he was top American special envoy in the Afghan-Pakistan region. He is now on sabbatical and sharing strictly his personal views today. Alexander Evans, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Alexandria, Virginia, is Shujaa Nawaz, a native of Pakistan, director of the South Asia Center at the Atlantic Council, author of Crossed Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. Shujaa Nawaz, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Alexander Evans, first to you. This was extraordinary testimony from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and you know just how deeply he's been involved in Pakistan. Americans seem justified in scratching their heads and asking, what is going on here? Are we involved in a kind of undeclared war with our erstwhile ally, Pakistan, Mr. Evans?
Well, I don't think we're at war with Pakistan, but clearly this is an incredibly troubled time for the U.S.-Pakistan relationship. And events over the past couple of weeks have exposed the fact that U.S. and Pakistani versions of their national interests appear to be different in some key areas. And the allegations made by Admiral Mullen are very serious. They've been repudiated by Pakistan. And really, this is a moment of great urgency for the relationship because Pakistan and the United States need to find a way forward. Is it going to be constructive engagement or is it actually going to be a severe deterioration of that relationship?
Shujaa Nawaz, this is not just the 20 hours that fire was rained down on the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. When afterward we were told that those fighters were on the cell phone to Pakistani intelligence people back in Pakistan while that fight was going on. It's not just the 77 NATO soldiers who were killed by a truck bomb recently or the hotel incident that we heard the admiral mention there or many others going back. I mean, there is a long chain here, and it's led now the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to say, The Haqqani Network piece of this, a very virulent piece of it, is a proxy for Pakistani intelligence. Do you believe that, Shujaa?
Well, I think the chairman must have good reason to have leveled these very serious charges, apart from his own personal anger at what he thought was a very sound and close relationship with his counterparts in the military hierarchy in Pakistan. But we don't have all the details yet of exactly who the militants were talking to and whether they were ISI officials or whether they were Haqqani people under the direction of or with loose links to the ISI. I think more details on that probably need to come out. But I agree with Alexander that this is probably among the worst that we've seen U.S.-Pakistan relations in a long while. And this divergence in the aims of these two strategic partners and allies has been around for quite a while. Unfortunately, it was papered over for a very long time, and it's now coming, unraveling before us.
Alexander Evans, I mean, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the admiral, certainly ripped the wallpaper off here, and there's a lot of consequence after that. Now, you've got Washington Today, unnamed sources in Washington, in the Pentagon. This is in the Washington Post, trying to walk this back, but this is a man who is not known for not weighing his words. And there's a lot of reaction already. We saw Lindsey Graham of the Senate Armed Services Committee on Sunday saying the U.S. should consider military action against Pakistan if it continues to support terrorist attacks. Said the sovereign nation of Pakistan is engaging in hostile acts against the United States. All options should be on the table. They're killing American soldiers. I mean, Alexander Evans, what are the parameters here? Again, ordinary listeners and readers could wonder, what's happening? Are we marching towards some kind of direct conflict with Pakistan?
Well, I certainly hope not, but clearly there's an enormous sense of frustration in Washington about the relationship with Pakistan. You know, the administration's invested a lot of effort and time at very senior level in building relationships with senior Pakistanis, both civilians and members of the military. And I think the administration's putting down a very public marker, saying there's a difference between Pakistan maintaining relationships with a set of militant groups and potentially supporting directly militant groups that kill American civilians and service personnel. And that I think, is the crux of the current crisis that we're facing in the relationship.
Let's take Admiral Mullen at his word, his assertion here, his testimony. Now, if the Pakistani intelligence service was behind this drumbeat, this repeated instances of heavy attacks on NATO troops, on Americans, on the U.S. embassy, what would be the point of that? We've long heard that Pakistan wants to be affiliated with the Taliban and jihadist groups. It gives it counterbalance on its western border against India on its east. But what would be the point in directly supporting attacks on American NATO troops in Afghanistan, Alexander?
Well, I think that's something you'd have to ask senior Pakistanis. But certainly Pakistan's
They just deny it. But yet these attacks are going on, and Mullen says they're behind them. I mean, help us here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly evidence that Pakistan has had a relationship with a range of groups in the past. Now, Pakistan doesn't deny that. The Pakistani foreign minister speaking in New York very recently didn't deny that the Pakistan government has links. She did deny that there was any commission of terrorist attacks against Americans. Part of the problem here is that Pakistan's strategic interests are very much down to its neighbourhood. For Pakistan, India is the most important dynamic in Pakistan's external relationships. And as far as Pakistan's concerned, they think that Americans kind of come and go in the region, but Afghans accumulate. Afghans and Afghanistan are there to stay. And Pakistan is determined to have strong strategic influence in and over Afghanistan. Obviously, the US policy interests in the region are somewhat different. But the idea that an effective way to pursue Pakistan's policy interests is to directly support terrorist groups is clearly something that would lead to significant trouble, not just in the U.S.-Pakistan relationship, but for Pakistan itself.
I'm trying to understand the reason, the potential reason here. Shujaa Nawaz, help us. I mean, I'm looking at speculation saying, this is in the press, that Pakistan wants the U.S. out and that they think by pushing now when things are not going well and, giving some black eyes, having Haqqani or whoever giving black eyes, may turn American public opinion against the war in Afghanistan. Why would Pakistan want the United States out of Afghanistan quickly, Shujaa?
Tom, it's a little more complex than that.
I'm sure.
I don't think the Pakistanis want the U.S. to leave in a precipitate manner, which is what happened the last time. And what emerged after that was chaos and a civil war in Afghanistan. And even though the Pakistanis succeeded in putting their allies, the Taliban, in Kabul, they suffered the after effects of that. The blowback of that has been the Talibanization of an insurgency inside Pakistan many years later. So I don't think they want the U.S. out in a rush, but in a more orderly fashion.
Then why support attacks? If Admiral Mullen is right, you don't have to agree with him, but if he is, why would that make sense?
I think Pakistan has still got some kind of an internal debate going on about the relationship with people like the Haqqani group, as to whether they give them a little edge in controlling the Pakhtun population of Afghanistan that is contiguous to Pakistan. And they continue to look at Afghanistan through that Pakhtun prism more than looking at Afghanistan as a mosaic of different ethnic and sectarian groups. And that has been the weakness in their strategy.
Looks like more than a little edge being reached for here, at least as portrayed by the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. Shujaa Nawaz, please stand by in Arlington, Virginia. Alexander Evans in Washington. We're talking this hour about the big U.S. blow-up with Pakistan asking, are we at war with an ally? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about the dramatic U.S. blow-up in the past week with Afghanistan. It's not new, but it is hot right now. It wasn't only Mullen. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta was also before that Senate Armed Services Committee last week, told them that the military, the U.S., can't allow the situation along the Afghan-Pakistan border to continue costing U.S. lives.
We simply cannot allow these kinds of terrorists to be able to go into Afghanistan, attack our forces, and then return to Pakistan for safe haven and not face any kind of pressure from the Pakistanis for that to stop.
Politicians ready to pick up on that. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham told Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday that Pakistan faces a choice between supporting terrorist groups and facing a potential U.S. military response.
If they continue to embrace terrorism as a part of their national strategy, we're going to have to put all options on the table, including defending our troops.
That's a pretty stunning statement, sir, by one of the top foreign policy voices. When you say all options on the table, you're talking about military action against whom?
I am saying that we know the Haqqani network operates with impunity inside of Pakistan in a town called Miram Shah. Admiral Mullen and Secretary Panetta are right that the ISI, the intelligence agency in Pakistan, assist them directly and indirectly. They do some good things with us against Al-Qaeda. They have to choose.
They have to choose. The senator went on to say, Pakistan is terrorism itself. They have made a tremendous miscalculation. Pakistan has been in full denial mode on this, really rejecting and objecting. The foreign minister of Pakistan spoke with NPR's Steve Inskeep. You may have heard it just today, saying that Islamabad rejected Mullen's accusations of links, the kind of links he described.
I can just say as Foreign Minister of Pakistan that we have strong reservations against a statement of this type, which is made by a person who is representing a country with which we have had many successes, and we cannot shove all of them under the rug because of some notions or notional links or real links or any type. You know, the intelligence world is a complex world. I wouldn't be in the right if I were to sit here and make any aspersions on your intelligence. I would not choose to do that.
It's a complicated world, says the Pakistan's foreign minister. It sure is. With us right now from Kabul, Afghanistan, is Alyssa Rubin, Kabul bureau chief for The New York Times. Alyssa, thanks very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point. How is all of this Admiral Mullen testimony and the furor around it going down in Afghanistan, Alyssa?
Well, I think people are asking some of the same questions that they're asking in the United States. Does this mean that the U.S. or the international forces here are going to attack Pakistan? And if so, are they going to do it from Afghan territory? And there are certainly large factions here, particularly the former Northern Alliance and others who are allied with them, who would like to see that, who are very frustrated, who feel like they've been saying for a long time that the problems come from Pakistan, and really it's not an Afghan problem. But it's the kinds of attacks we've seen here, the bombings and all of that. But that probably considerably oversimplifies it. There's also a indigenous insurgency here, and it's not clear at all that it would be changed substantially by attacks on Pakistan unless there were going to be something really very large scale. And I think that's probably the dilemma. You know, when you ask people, they somehow want all the problems removed. I was just speaking with the governor of Parwan today, who's a former Northern Alliance commander, and he wants Karzai to come out and name Pakistan and the international community to sanction it and name it as a terrorist state. And then what? You know, it's not clear that the U.S. has the means or the willingness to engage in another major conflict in this region.
That kind of talk is in Washington, too. Senator Carl Levin, Democrat, Michigan, saying recently he hoped the administration would move quickly to add the Haqqani group to a State Department list of formerly a terrorist group. In that case, if Pakistan is said by our chairman of the Joint Chiefs to be supporting them, that has all kinds of implications. Alyssa, you're right there, watching these attacks in recent weeks and months that seem to have gotten Mullen's attention. The one on the embassy, of course, the big truck bomb that killed, wounded 77 NATO soldiers. Is there something different about these recent attacks in their nature, their aggressiveness, something about them that sets them apart from the many attacks we've heard of over many years?
Well, I would be hard-pressed to say that. There have been a number of very, very disturbing attacks over several years. In Afghanistan and suicide attacks and a number of assassinations that were also very carefully planned and undoubtedly involved some direction perhaps from at least Afghans living on the other side of the border, if not from Pakistanis or ISI or whoever. But I think there are a couple of things going on, it looks like, from here, and people are, you know, questioning, is it that there's really something different here, or is it that Chairman Mullen is leaving and is finally able to sort of speak his mind and discuss his, you know, frustration? And I think that's one question, is this really something that they're going to be willing to act on? I mean, here there has been a very clear attack on the peace process, which for whatever reason it would seem that Pakistan sees as inimical to its interests here.
Why would that be, Alyssa? We can hear what sounds like a call to prayer behind you there in Kabul, but why would a peace process, an advance on that front, be inimical to Pakistan? We saw the former president of Afghanistan, who was heading up that effort, killed by a suicide bomber with a bomb in his turban just in the last couple of weeks. Now, why would that process breaking down be potentially desired by Pakistan?
Well, I think they're very concerned about the possibility that the Taliban become independent actors and cut some sort of deal with the Afghan government that Pakistan does not control, because then they lose them as a potential asset and buffer for them to protect them from Indian interests gaining ground in Afghanistan. And you have to remember that Professor Rabbani, as he's known, the head of the High Peace Council here, who was assassinated, he was one of the founders of Jamiat, which was the political party that that became sort of the Northern Alliance. And they were helped by India. They were very close to them. So I think that from a Pakistani standpoint, this is a threat and a situation which they may not be able to control. And so that was certainly one of the elements.
Do we just settle back into the same old pattern now after the Mullen comments and all this, Alyssa? Or do you feel like somehow this candor or hot comment, whatever you want to call it, has pushed us onto new terrain?
That's really a question that will have to be answered in Washington. I mean, clearly nothing happened immediately. I mean, no bombs have fallen in our neighborhood that we're aware of. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some certainly some very, very strong pressure put, and you know, special forces raids of the kind we've seen before, perhaps even larger ones on some of the Haqqani infiltration network sort of rat lines that come into the country. We know there are a number of them, but I think the question is, can they? What are the risks and benefits of what Lindsey Graham was talking about? Some kind of targeted bombing in Mir and Shah. They will kill in any urban area. Civilians potentially. You have to be very careful if you're going to selectively kill leadership. And they did very well, of course, with Osama bin Laden. But this is going to be even more complicated. And it's not just one. It's a many-headed sort of clan, the Haqqanis, and so perhaps not so easy. And there will be some costs. How much do you want to alienate Pakistan? Do you really want to not be able to talk to them? So I think these are all big, big questions that have to be worked out. But I think, can you make a threat and not follow through in some way? It would seem that either there has to be a change in behavior or you have to follow through on, at least to some degree, with some kind of gesture.
That, I don't know what you call it, maybe imperative, maybe not, but that seems like new terrain. Alyssa Rubin with the New York Times in Kabul, bureau chief there. It's always great to speak with you. Thank you very much for being with us today, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Alexander Evans, you know this terrain so well. I mean, you've served a lot in Pakistan and Afghanistan. You saw Pakistan's response to U.S. forces coming in unannounced to go after and kill Osama bin Laden. If Alyssa's right, if they're, you know, Mullen's comments raise the, I don't know if it's requirement or likelihood, the threat of some actual response, U.S. forces that may be over the border in Pakistan. I mean, we saw how hot the Pakistani reaction to coming in after bin Laden himself was. If they should come in again, what kind of reaction consequences might that have?
Well, there's a very powerful sense of Pakistani nationalism, but if anything, it's been more in evidence over the last 6 or 8 months. And I think many Pakistanis, not just the military, feel that the problems inside Pakistan over the last few years, and the 35,000 or so Pakistanis killed since 9/11, are the byproduct, in a sense, of Pakistan's alliance with the United States, because Pakistan has supported the United States on counterterrorism and in Afghanistan. I think actually any Pakistani response to future potential actions by the US would potentially be very robust. And Pakistan has certainly, the political discourse inside Pakistan has been one in which Pakistan's national interests and national sovereignty have been paramount.
Robust is one of those diplomatic words, but what might that mean? We still get something, the US still gets something like 50% of all of its supplies in Afghanistan through Pakistan. Cutting that off, more than that?
Well, I mean, we can only really speculate, but the US and NATO do depend on that supply line through Pakistan. It remains very important. And I think there is this issue that at the moment, Pakistan remains important to the United States for a number of reasons. In the short term, the supply chain. Mm-hmm. In the short term, dealing with counterterrorism as well. And we shouldn't forget that Pakistan's cooperation with the United States and with other allied countries has been pretty crucial in terms of detecting and dealing with potential terrorist plots that could have killed Americans or killed Europeans.
And the drone strikes and all the rest, which they've been apparently tied to, helping inform and target.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are differences of view on that in public terms between Islamabad and Washington. But I think the crucial element here is the United States will need to have a relationship, a working relationship with Pakistan well into the future, even assuming that tomorrow Afghanistan wasn't a political issue, even assuming that tomorrow counterterrorism issues in Pakistan that are linked to threats in the United States were no longer an issue, Pakistan would still be relevant. It's a nuclear-armed state. It's a big state. It's a state that is in a very crucial geopolitical area. But one thing is very clear, that part of the flexibility around the policy debate in Washington now is based on a recognition that in 2 or 3 years' time, as troop numbers as NATO troop numbers in Afghanistan decline, so will U.S. dependence on that supply line through Pakistan. So I think actually one of the things that Pakistan may be missing at the moment is an opportunity. But at the moment, it's a real opportunity for Pakistan to reshape the relationship with the United States.
You mean the U.S. would have more latitude because they'd be less vulnerable to Pakistan's response as they draw down in Afghanistan?
Absolutely. And I think this is a really important point, because I think there's, peculiarly enough, an opportunity here. And the opportunity is for there to be a really robust dialogue, most probably in private, between Pakistan and the United States about where there can be effective functional cooperation.
I don't know if that's clearly reassuring, though, or scary. If they have more latitude, if it doesn't matter as much what Pakistan thinks, they could be more tempted to go after terrorist bases there, I guess.
Well, I guess the twist is more this, that for Pakistan, I think there is a strategic interest in having an effective bilateral relationship with the United States, just as there is the other way. Now, some things are absolutely beyond the pale, and any evidence of Pakistani involvement in the murder of Americans is clearly one of those things. But I think, you know, there are people now talking about containing Pakistan in Washington. There are people talking about, as we heard earlier on the Hill, about potential sanctioning of Pakistan, or at least cutting aid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very different type of conversation about policy towards Pakistan than you were hearing in Washington a year or 2 years ago.
Shujan Nawaz, why would Pakistan be so opposed to the peace process? Washington has wanted that to go forward so that they can get some kind of stability and maybe get out of there on timetable. Now, Alexander Evans says, Alyssa said the idea of Taliban as an independent actor in some kind of Afghan government is very disturbing to them. Does Pakistan insist on this NATO era being followed by Afghanistan as some kind of vassal state?
That's the old Pakistani view of Afghanistan, and one would hope that would change, given their experience with the last Taliban regime, which rarely acceded to any Pakistani request. But as I said earlier, there is still a debate that is going on, and that's a very necessary debate inside the Pakistani leadership, and particularly among the military leadership, as to exactly what the relationship can and should be with Afghanistan. Now, in this very complex set of relationships, the United States can and has played a role. For instance, when General McChrystal was the commander of troops in Afghanistan, he played a very critical role in bringing together Afghan and Pakistan leaders, and sat in on those meetings and managed to get a trilateral dialogue going about common aims and objectives for after the coalition departs the region. That kind of dialogue needs to be picked up again. I think it's very critical that we don't cross any red lines either for the U.S. or for Pakistan. Alexander had already identified a potential red line, which would be direct involvement of Pakistan in supporting the killing of U.S. troops and coalition forces in Afghanistan. On the Pakistan side, a very critical red line that they have often conveyed to the United States, privately and in public, has been troops on the ground.
Over the border in Pakistan. Shujan Nawaz, please stand by. Of course, Admiral Mullen talking about red lines, too, and saying they've been crossed by proxies for Pakistan here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we've been talking this hour about the big U.S. blow-up with Pakistan, Admiral Mullen's testimony last week, and fears in some quarters that we are in some way already under the covers at war with what's supposed to be an ally. And again, the Pakistani foreign minister talking with Steve Inskeep just on the air today. This is Hina Rabbani Kaur saying, look, Pakistan has suffered a lot also in this decade of war in her region.
We are both fighting against the same people. Pakistan has lost 30,000 of its men, women and children to the same war that your country is fighting. Imagine how the U.S. would react if such a number had lost their lives, and then comments would come from other countries which said that you are the problem, you are part of the problem.
Yeah, comments not just from other countries, but from Admiral Mike Mullen. We are listening, though, and true, those casualties are real. Let's go to our listeners. Buffalo, New York, Ashraf is calling. Ashraf, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call, and greetings to the guests as well. I have a comment and a question. My comment is, this is not the first time that the United States has gotten false intelligence that made us sound the drumbeat for war, for example, Iraq. And I'm afraid that some of the intelligence that we were getting could be actually intentional false intelligence prepared by the Haqqani Network or the Taliban to further drive a wedge between relations between, excuse me, to drive a wedge in relations between the United States and Pakistan and further escalate the problem in the region.
And your comment, Ashraf, quickly?
That's my comment. My question is, has anybody considered that the intelligence that we're getting?
Yeah, we'll look at it. We'll look at it right now. Shujaa Nawaz, what about it? Could Mike Mullen, for all of his dozens of trips to Pakistan, be mistaking, you know, bad intelligence, a deliberate plant, an effort to disrupt this relationship? For, you know, could he be wrong? Could this be a plant?
I'm not sure it would suit the Haqqanis to provoke a direct confrontation between the United States and Pakistan, because they would be caught in between the two forces. They operate out of three provinces in Afghanistan and out of North Waziristan. And should there be any kind of conflict between the U.S. and Pakistan, they would be right in the thick of it and would not benefit tremendously.
It's hard to see, but yet things are always complex and murky here. I understand the curiosity. Ahmed in Montreal. Ahmed, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Basically, I just wanted to say the USA, I feel, always has that same attitude of do as I say, not as I do. Right now, they're bombing and killing people in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and in Palestine through the Israelis. And now another one, possibly with Pakistan, another Muslim country here. I don't know. Is it a coincidence that all these are Muslim countries? Are the crusades continuing? I don't understand here.
Ahmed, let us do the exercise. Alexander Evans, turn it around with us for a moment, because it is very, very plain that Pakistanis in their many millions are very unhappy with the United States. Mike Mullen may be unhappy with Pakistan, but Pakistanis are unhappy with the U.S. Now, the foreign minister points to 30,000 casualties in the last decade. That may be reason enough, end of story right there. But you hear Ahmed, you know, seeing this as an attack on a Muslim country. How would you characterize the deep Pakistani alienation from the U.S. right now? Why, Alexander?
Well, I think some of it's been in Pakistani politics and Pakistani society for many years. You know, I've recently been looking at papers from 1948, which show anti-American protests in Karachi. So some of this is not new. I don't think anti-Americanism is unique to Pakistan. You know, there's that old joke that in a lot of countries you see a bit of graffiti that says, "Yankee, go home, but take me with you." You know, there's I think, always going to be a certain kind of level of both resentment and envy of a leading superpower. But I think in Pakistan, it's the argument that that this is because Pakistan is a Muslim state, I think, is misplaced. And you know, I guess the counterexample would be Kosovo. One of the interesting things about the Kosovo intervention was it took place to defend the rights of the people of Kosovo, to both be protected from the Serbian forces that were then attacking them, but also to advance their national rights and their sovereignty. So I think, you know, it's very important to not select negative Muslim case examples to make a more generic case about a clash of civilizations, because I don't think that's true in the policy world.
Could we go back to the issue of what kind of government power structure will be or would be in Afghanistan when and if, we hope not too long from now, NATO and U.S. forces are out of there? Can you see a balance? How do you thread the needle here, Alexander Evans, that would be satisfactory to everybody, the Afghans, Washington, Pakistan? Or is there some just insoluble problem here about, you know, who's going to be pulling strings or have sway with the ultimate government in Afghanistan? Is there, how do you thread the needle? What's the brass ring?
Well, I don't believe that Afghanistan is insoluble. I think a political process that involved Afghanistan's neighbors and the different parties inside Afghanistan could achieve a viable settlement. Whether it will or not, we wait and see. But I do think there's something that's true about both Pakistan and Afghanistan, which is, if you look back at the 1990s, both examples from the 1990s, the first is the early 1990s and Afghanistan at civil war, and Afghanistan that was ravaged by that civil conflict. In the late 1990s, the Afghanistan under Taliban misrule and the extremes of that government, I don't think either of those scenarios are desirable for any of the regional actors in South Asia today, including Pakistan. So one of the challenges is there a way forward to some kind of new balance in Afghanistan that doesn't cross Pakistan's security interests and red lines, so ensures Pakistan's support, but also creates a balance that's acceptable to all the regional actors? And you know, countries like Iran and India are just as important here.
Why would the former president, who was heading up the peace talks such as they were before he was assassinated with a turban bomb, why then would he, for example, that effort be, if indeed that's a Pakistani-based attack, why would that not be acceptable to Pakistan?
Well, I don't think that Pakistan is opposed to a political process in Afghanistan. They've said so very clearly and publicly that they would support a political process
in Afghanistan.
The guy's
dead. He was blown up by a turban bomb. Somebody didn't like it.
Absolutely. Somebody most definitely didn't like him, and somebody murdered him. But I think the issue about a political process is Pakistan will also want to maximize its influence in whatever emerges from such a political process. So you know, Pakistan does view itself as having a very special relationship with Afghanistan. And as Shuja was saying earlier, one of the big questions is where will the policy debate within Pakistan come out about what Pakistan's national interests in Afghanistan are and what that should mean in practical policy terms for the Pakistanis in terms of the choices they should make about supporting or remaining outside a political process in and on Afghanistan. Mm. And about actions they might take against groups like the Haqqani Network.
Admiral Mullen didn't sound too optimistic last week. Brian in Topsfield, Massachusetts is calling. Brian, thanks. You're on the air.
Tom, everything you've discussed thus far in your program almost sounds like a rehash of Stephen Call's book, Ghost War.
Yeah.
A Washington Post reporter.
Great, great book. We're trying to push it forward, Brian, but it just keeps rolling, doesn't it?
It's a rehash of everything, and what particularly strikes me is the function of the ISI acting as a filter for all foreign aid, and basically they're looking down the road. They never lose sight of the fact that the real issue is India, and therefore they either turn a blind eye or directly support people that they can enfranchise to help them fight in Kashmir. But with the presence of us now, there are American casualties, whereas in the past, there hasn't been. And it also appears that the ISI is traditionally the kingmaker in that part of the world. Now, the poor gentleman who got blown up by the turban bomb, had he been a chosen son of the ISI, he'd probably be alive.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But you're pointing at India, and it's important to look at that. It's interesting, it came up in the GOP debate last week. There was the question to Rick Perry about the 3 a.m. phone call. Always comes up in these debates, and in this case it would be, you know, how would he react to a 3 a.m. phone call saying that Pakistan had lost control of its nuclear weapons, maybe to jihadists? And it was interesting. He stumbled around a lot with this question, kind of froze up on it. But when he got going, he turned to look at the U.S. relationship with India as a potential answer, he was saying, that ought to have been there all along. Here's Perry.
Yesterday, we found out through Admiral Mullen that Haqqani has been involved with, and that's the terrorist group directly associated with the Pakistani country. So to have a relationship with India, to make sure that India knows that they are an ally of the United States. For instance, when we had the opportunity to sell India the upgraded F-16s, we chose not to do that. We did the same thing with Taiwan. The point is, our allies need to understand clearly that we are their friends.
Shuja Nawaz, is that the ultimate threat here? When Mullen's talking, when a potential GOP presidential candidate is talking about a relationship with India and arming India up, never mind the details, but getting upgraded fighter jets to them, is that the ultimate threat? Does the U.S. really have leverage from Pakistan's east? Could it dream of using it when they're both nuclear-armed neighbors?
Well, calling it an ultimate threat is one way of looking at it. I see it as the ultimate opportunity. I think the relationship between Pakistan and India is critical for stability in the region, for the growth and development of Pakistan, and for the stability and growth of Afghanistan. The reason is that India will need energy, every ounce of energy it can get, and the cheapest and easiest would be from Central Asia through Afghanistan and Pakistan. The good news is, and this has been clouded over by this whole brouhaha over the Mullen statement, that a lot of the relationship between Pakistan and the United States still continues. There is cooperation, there's training, there's economic assistance, and that the Indians and Pakistanis are now talking to each other too, to try and open their borders to trade, to try and resolve some of the lingering disputes between them. And the U.S. has now got a strategic partnership with both India and Pakistan, and it can, behind the scenes, play a role in further strengthening that relationship so that they don't see themselves in competition in Afghanistan, but can actually work together to stabilize a post-coalition Afghanistan.
It's a great idea, maybe the only idea ultimately, but it doesn't appear too vividly on the table in this last week. Michael in Boston, thanks for calling. Michael, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for your work and thanks for the work of the panelists. I call because I'd like to represent a bit of just the Afghans' perspective. I started an organization there called Community Supported Film to help Afghans tell their own stories. And the story that they have been so frustrated about hasn't been getting out for the last 10 years is the very fact of Pakistan's involvement, the very fact that they've been being killed, internationals and Americans have been being killed because of ISI proxy involvement. And it is fundamentally an issue that if we're only getting to it today, we're way, way, way behind in terms of getting it dealt with. I mean, the very first day I arrived in Afghanistan, I sat down in my room and all the windows in front of me blew open because of a bombing down the street at the Indian embassy. Now, we called that primarily an attack on the finance ministry, which happened to be next door, but the attack was clearly at the Indian embassy. 2 months later, I was just leaving Afghanistan. The guest house next to me blew up. It was housing 16 Indians. The attacks in Afghanistan that are against Indian targets aren't being done by Afghans. All the Afghans I know feel very close to the Indians and know that these kind of things are happening.
Michael, our time is short. Yeah, I appreciate your call. Right along those lines, Alexander Evans reading Lara Logan, the chief correspondent for CBS News, just in the last couple of days, saying that the enemy, I mean, this is just a sign of the tenor of the conversation in the U.S., at least. The enemy is inside Pakistan, not Afghanistan. But they're protected by a supposed U.S. ally based on arrogance and ignorance. She says, sort of speaking directly in a very hot essay here, it's at our website, to the U.S. She said, if you're not prepared to kill your enemy where they stand, in Afghanistan or Pakistan, by whatever means possible, then do not lie to your troops and your nation and pretend you are at war, saying that it's a one-sided war. It's coming out of Pakistan, whether it's Pakistanis or not. This is kind of real. It may have been the dynamic for a long time, Alexander Evans, but this looks like the most fraught pass I can recall in all these years.
Well, I think it is fraught, but I think it's also really important to try and maintain a sense of perspective. And that's extremely difficult when these issues, you know, when a lot of people point across borders and it's difficult to kind of take a view from, say, 35,000 feet of what the problem is on the whole. And, you know, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think moving forward, if more Americans are killed in incidents that appear to trace back directly to Pakistan's government, then that has enormous implications for the region as well as the bilateral relationship. But I don't think we should forget that Pakistan itself has been fighting a series of terrorist threats to its own state. And, you know, I was living in Pakistan for a period, 2007 to 2009, where you saw a wide range of bombings in cities like Islamabad and Lahore. Some of those bombings targeted military personnel, some of them targeted ISI personnel. I think the problem is this genie has been unleashed in the region. And to try and figure out and deal with the problem both of terrorism, not just of al-Qaeda, but related groups like the Haqqani Network, like indeed Lashkar-e-Taiba, another group that's killed Americans as well as Indians, we can only fix Afghanistan's problems, we can only deal with the counterterrorism problem if people are working together. So for all the blunt words in the last couple of weeks...
It's not just blunt words, it's attacks. It's long attacks with lots of casualties.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know, if anything, that needs to reinforce a determined effort to try and work out effective means to cooperate on areas where we can cooperate. and reiterate some of these red lines that are also really important to the United States?
Well, they were reiterated just about as from just about as high a level as you can find in the U.S. military just last week, or iterated very publicly, and we'll see where this goes. Alexander Evans, former special advisor to Richard Holbrooke, now on sabbatical. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Tom.
Shujan Nawaz, author of Crossed Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within, director of the South Asia Center at the Atlantic Council. Thank you for joining us, Shujan.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.